FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 12/29/17. Just two more days left to the year. Well, everybody makes forecasts, resolutions, predictions. Not all of them come to pass, as you know, for myself and for you, no doubt. Well, first, housekeeping. Be a part of the show. I've been getting tons of your emails, especially end of the year for some reason. I'm not quite sure why. A little bit behind, but send them and I will get to them. KL@KerryLutz.com. Twitter feed's at Kerry Lutz. Don't forget, sign up for the newsletter at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. So today, 2 days before the end of the year, gold has broken $1,300 the ounce on the spot market. And wouldn't be that significant. It's done it three or four times already this year. And I wouldn't even really be bringing it up, except that the person you're about to hear from called it almost to the T, and he's been doing it since I know him. I think we go back to 2014, to December of that year. And I'm talking about Eric Haddock, InsideTrack.com. That's Inside, InsideTrack, track.com. Check it out. And will gold be going up further this year? Will silver, the unloved precious metal, finally find its way? Well, all good questions that Eric will be answering. Eric, welcome back and happy new year to you and yours.
Oh, thank you for having me back, Kerry. And I wish you a happy and healthy and prosperous 2018.
Well, if the metals markets move the way they look like they're poised to, that won't even be an issue. But what's going to happen here? Where are we now? We'll go down, talk about what happened in 2017 and what you see happening in 2018, not just for precious metals, but for the dollar, for U.S. stocks and oil and whatever else, whatever other markets appear interesting. So we just broke 1300. You called this almost to a T. I got an alert from you, I think, 4 days ago saying, watch February gold. If it breaks 1265, then get ready. Here we are a few days later. We're over 1300. I mean, it's uncanny. It really is uncanny, Eric.
Well, I think you're referring to a couple of updates that I've sent out dating back to December 12th, when really for one of the first times the gold stocks were leading the turnaround here, and the XAU index triggered a multi-week buy signal back on December 11th, 12th. I was even very intrigued by the divergence it had versus a couple similar entities like the Gold Bugs HUI index and GDX ETF, and the XAU was showing some early signs of turnaround strength. But it was also the timing in which that happened, because since early February, when my work was signaling a multi-month top in gold stocks, the focus has been on November, December for a final intra-year low in the gold stocks. And as we got into the third quarter, fourth quarter, that started kind of honing in on the period of December 4th to the 15th, when some weekly cycles also came into play and were showing a bottom. And the one thing that I needed to see was the XAU break below its mid-year low, which would then basically complete a large-scale ABC correction from the February high. And the XAU did just that in early December, spiked right down to an extreme downside target that we had published, targeting 75.77 on that index. And then with all that downside fulfilled, it then gave this buy signal on December 12th. And that was when we were looking for a multi-week rally, but something that was likely to then evolve into a multi-month rally into at least February of the coming year. And that 1265 on gold was part of some analysis from about a week and a half ago, where gold had also given signs of a turnaround and it needed to close above that level to confirm. And our first upside target on the gold futures, the February gold futures, is 1307, which we're nearing now. I think a lot of this is a preliminary wave up, something that does enough damage to the preceding bear market, preceding decline, that that you take some of the steam out of the bears, start to embolden the bulls a little bit. I think we're likely to see a couple week pullback and then see a nice advance into February. Really, the closing levels of gold today, which is the monthly close, and also because it's a weekly close, that level is going to really specify my targets for the next 4 to 6 weeks. So that's when I should really get even more clarity on that outlook. But on a broader perspective, gold has fulfilled the very general outlook for 2017, which was to see about a 4 month rally to begin the year, then about a 2 month pullback, and a mid 2017 secondary low as the building blocks, kind of a developing bottoming phase that would then usher in 2018. So that general outlook that we published in the January 2017 Inside Track held pretty well. The only time it kind of went off kilter a little bit in the October-November time period, but it's back on track, and so the outlook into February is really in shape.
Yeah, well, it's uncanny because you said fourth quarter, and here we are, late fourth quarter, as late as it can get, but here we are, it's rallying rather remarkable, and you know, something to feel good about that call for sure. Because look, forecasting, Yogi Berra said, predictions are very tricky, especially about the future. And, you know, who can tell what's going to happen? Because there's so many things, yeah. Right? There's so many factors that you can never be absolutely sure for anything.
Right. And that's where I think cycles are so valuable, and they're not perfect. They're not precise. You definitely need the price action and the specific indicators and other factors to hone that. But the cycles really identify the time when certain transitions are most likely. And even with gold, you've had this kind of annual 360 degree cycle that has now created lows in December 2015, 2016, and 2017. The XAU had a combination of a very consistent 11 to 12 month cycle that dates back even before 2015, and then these weekly cycles. And once you start to see the synergy of them, then it's time to really start looking for the confirmation or the validation of price action. And so that's why I see a lot of value in cycles, but you also need to recognize their limitations, their weaknesses, and use other things to compensate for that.
Exactly. So let's move on to some other markets here and economic trends. Stock market, are we finally going to see a peak here? Is it finally going to go back or pull back? What's your thoughts here?
Well, I have had a lot of multi-year, multi-decade cycles that were telling me to look for a peak in 2017, kind of like the inverse of gold. We've waited much longer in the year than I originally anticipated. But that, again, is where price action really kind of had to clarify that outlook early on in the year. I came into this year looking for two key lows in April and September and a sequence of highs overlapping that. And one of the more consistent cycles, which is certainly important to review now, is a very consistent 20-week cycle in the S&P 500. And I discussed this late last year and then illustrated again in my September Inside Track. But it had very consistently timed successive lows in February 2016, which was really the culmination of that 6 to 8 month downdraft that started in mid-2015. Then the ensuing 20-week cycle came into play in late June, early July of 2016, and perfectly timed the Brexit sell-off low. The 20 weeks after that was early November 2016, precisely timed the post-election or during the election spike low. And then this fourth one was late March, early April of this year. And the thing that I've demonstrated and explained with my cycle progression indicator is that when you get a cycle that's very consistently moving through lows like that, after you see the fourth one, you're usually entering the phase where a market has a little more dynamic move to the upside. And from a cycle standpoint, it then begins to invert and start to time successive highs. So that same 20-week cycle then was projecting an intermediate peak for early August, which we got pretty much right on time. Saw a decent sell-off in some of the indices, but as I was illustrating in this diagram that I published back in late August, the real important peak was the week of December 26th to the 29th, which we're right there now. And the thing that was intriguing to me, again, kind of like with gold, is that as that last 4 months or so played out, 4 to 5 months, you saw many other weekly and daily cycles starting to corroborate and starting to focus in on the same week, December 26th to the 29th. So from a cycle standpoint, I'm looking for any signs of a top. One of the first short-term indications of that I got a couple days ago was the NASDAQ 100 turning its daily trend down. That's a specific trend indicator that I use, but it helps identify when you've got an intermediate top in the making. And there's a couple of other corroborating indicators that I want to see kick in either today or early next week.
Right. So, yeah, you just wonder how far it can keep going up, you know, with everything that's going on in the world. But you don't focus on events, you focus on charts and cycles. So you don't have to deal with those issues, I guess.
Right. And it's, you know, a lot of times antagonists to technical analysis will really try to refute any validity in the charts. But what I really try to emphasize so often, it's just like it's like a cardiologist looking at an EKG, or it's like a obstetrician looking at a measurement of contractions and whatnot. They're all just lines on a chart. But when you understand what those lines and what those numbers are reflecting and what they're indicating, then it takes on a whole new realm of significance. It's not just that there's lines on a chart, and it's not just drawing angles back and forth. In fact, there's a lot of overused technical patterns that I am a little more skeptical of. But when you take a more holistic view and understand how trends and how mass psychology evolves during the early phases, where not everyone's convinced and you're getting a slow transition phase, that's reflected on the charts. Then when all of a sudden something kind of hits that tipping point or crosses the Rubicon, and all of a sudden the masses jump in, that's also something that's very clearly reflected on the charts. But you have to know what it is you're looking at, what those ticks and what those up and down movements are reflecting. It's not just some lines on a piece of paper.
Yeah, so there's an art to the science of this, really, I guess is what you're saying, that you have
absolutely. It is both.
Yeah, so interesting, because some people have got the knack for it, right? Others just don't. You know, it makes me wonder, can anybody learn how to do this, or is it really that tough that it's kind of like reading the tea leaves and not having gypsy blood in you, if you will?
Well, I would go back to the analogy that I just used. And if anyone wanted to sit down with various medical readout charts with no education on what is driving them and what particular anomalies are very worrisome and make you want to really focus, and other anomalies that are just anomalies. If you just sat down with those readouts and no context and no prior experience in education, it would be just a guessing game. And there might be certain patterns that, you know, in a textbook could say, you know, when those contractions on a sonogram go from, you know, the teens up to the 20s and into the 30s, yes, in most cases, a baby is pretty close at hand. But then there's all these other nuances within those charts that a very experienced and educated doctor is going to know what they mean, and whether he should suddenly change course, or, you know, take remedial action, or wait and see. He knows that because of the underlying knowledge, education, experience. Whereas if someone just sat down with a piece of paper or 20 different readouts and tried to anticipate what was to follow them, it then does become just a guessing game and just looking at the tea leaves.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. And yeah, some people, you know, they look at numbers and they just see numbers. Other people see stories, both past and present. So looking at the dollar, it's weakened by about 8% this year. And you're looking at more weakening for the coming year?
To an extent. I have discussed for 5, 6, 7 years now the overall pattern that I was expecting in the dollar, and this has to do with everything from a 40-year cycle that has been uncanny in our nation and in our nation's economy and currency, and also in global economics, but also more specific and more shorter-term cycles. But what I was looking for was the dollar to see a pretty sizable advance from 2013 into late 2016, early 2017, and then an important reversal in there to the downside. And the initial 1 to 2 year downtrend that I was anticipating from that, I thought would stretch into the second quarter of 2018. And ideally, and when I say ideally, I'm just referring to where the greatest synergy of all of the timing indicators that I'm using, including cycles, ideally into May of 2018, when I think that the dollar could see a pretty important bottom. But if we do see that next leg down, which I think has already begun more slowly, if and when that breaks below the September lows, which I think will happen, I think that is going to be one of those times when a lot of your economists and your traders start to take a little sharper notice of what's going on in the dollar, and that could be when gold and silver see a bit more of an accelerated advance too, that you start to get more worries about the dollar, even though in my opinion, you'd be getting closer to a pretty important bottom in, like I said, ideally in May of 2018. So the dollar is holding to that outlook. And I think that there are some things that it could trigger early in January that would really confirm that and pinpoint where it could get on the downside in the next 3 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, so let's look at oil. You were calling for higher prices in oil. We're at around $60 the barrel, I think, last time I looked. And looks like it's found kind of a nice resting place there. It seems to be pretty stable there.
Yes, oil from a multi-year standpoint looks very similar to gold and silver. and that was a sharp sell-off into late 2015, early 2016, with enough damage being done there that I thought it would take 12 to 18 months of a bottoming process before crude in particular could really sustain a significant move to the upside. And that's why I kept saying to look at third quarter of 2017 for that bottoming phase to start to transition into more of an uptrend. And going back 6-8 months, the products, the unleaded gas and heating oil, were showing some leading indicators and also some very synergistic cycles and other timing indicators that all told me to look for a significant rally into January of 2018. And they have been adhering pretty closely to that. Crude oil, the February contract that I'm watching, is showing some both upside targets and significant resistance around the $62 level. So I'm going to be watching to see if it makes it there, when it makes it there, and what it's doing right in those surrounding days. That should give me a pretty good indication of whether I think we're looking at just a short-term peak or whether this could be a pretty significant peak coming into play at that time. And the action of heating oil in particular is going to help hone that as well.
Yeah, interesting, because, you know, everybody just assumed it was going to stay sub $50 indefinitely, and it never seems to work that way. So I guess all the years that it's been beat up and declining, it finally got the weak holders out, and really the shorts have taken their profits, and now it's time probably for reversal on it.
Yeah, and that's one of those things too where a lot of times the charts give me some idea of certain fundamentals to look for. And I had even written some articles and put a post on my LinkedIn page a couple months ago as well that just kind of asked the question, since these cycles are showing that heating oil should rally into January, is that an indication of some temperature issues that we have leading into there? And all of a sudden, you know, we've got this bitter cold weather moving across the last few weeks, and talking about Times Square could be seeing its second coldest New Year's in history. It just often those fundamentals will kick in towards the end of a trend. And, you know, it's also kind of telling me, is that kind of the that last surge that you often see in a trend when it's suddenly on everybody's radar? You know, everyone will probably start talking about excessive cold and better get into heating oil. Well, when those fundamentals kick in, that's often more towards the end of a trend, not the beginning. And when everyone recognizes it, who is there left to be buying? And that's another thing that the charts reflect, is when these trends have gone into a crescendo and reached sometimes a parabolic top, although that hasn't really been the case in the energy markets, except on a couple of short-term basis. But it plays together very nicely when you get those fundamentals corroborating what the technicals and what the charts are already showing.
Oh yeah, for sure. Hey, looking at natural gas, it's gone up a bit from its low. I think it hit 260. Recently, just like last week or the week before. Now we've got the weather issues in the Northeast and throughout the country, for that matter. You got any opinion on it?
Well, natural gas has had critical support just above the 250 level going back the last couple of years. And so even just from a support standpoint, it went back down and attacked that mid-month. And like you say, then we get this cold starting to come on everybody's radar, and you get this surge. I have been talking about a pretty strong convergence of cycles in February for natural gas, when I thought we would see a pretty significant top. So it meant that if those cycles were accurate and my perception of them was accurate, then it meant that natural gas needed to see a pretty good surge in January and leading into January and through January. So the action of the last week has certainly given some initial validation to that, but I need to see more confirming indicators kick in to give me a higher confidence level in that analysis.
Right. All right. So, well, what are you seeing for volatility for the coming year? I mean, it's kind of obvious from what you said, but I'll let you say it.
Well, there's different periods of time when, you know, I think we are going to see some sharp moves, but as is almost always the case, you get those consolidation phases leading into and often immediately following the big spikes. When you're looking at equity markets, I've been talking about the weeks surrounding March 2018 and a specific time in March of 2018, because I thought that would be a spike low from what some of these cycles are telling me. So there again, it's kind of like these other lows back in August of 2015 and January, February 2016. They're out there on the horizon. They're indicating that they should be lows. And when the market's moving up to within a couple months of those cycles, it's kind of confusing or confounding, but I go back to what I describe as the 90-10 rule of cycles that has become more and more prevalent in recent years, and that is that 90% of the move often happens in the last 10% of a cycle. So when you have a 6-month low-to-low cycle and the market could be moving up for 4 or 5 months, and then see the lion's share of a decline happen in just those final weeks leading into a cycle low. That's just how the markets have operated more and more in recent years. And I think it's a function of how investing takes place and how all of your computer-driven signals and execution takes place, that it's all at one time, and then boom, it's gone. You know, within a few days or a few weeks, a big sell-off, or in the case of precious metals, a big rally is suddenly exhausted, and then you go into these consolidation phases for weeks or months after. I think we'll continue to see that kind of pattern. And the one other thing that we didn't really touch on, but I think is going to continue to be an intriguing factor in 2018 is cryptocurrency and, oh, yeah, and Bitcoin. And it just plays into this whole idea of currency wars every 40 years that I continue to stress. And, you know, this past year we saw the dollar having weakness, gold just kind of mired in some congestion, and that was the perfect setup for something like Bitcoin to really take off. And conversely, it wouldn't surprise me at all to see gold come back into favor in the coming months, and that maybe take a little bit of the luster off of your cryptocurrency. Not that they're directly related or completely inversely correlated, but from a general standpoint, you kind of have that that battle between what currency per se is going to be king of the hill. And I think the first part of 2018 is when you're more likely to see gold wrestle back that mantle, at least for a brief period of time.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, we talk so much about cryptocurrencies, and I guess I'd be remiss in not going over it with you. So Bitcoin hit close to 20,000. Now it's down to 14,000. It's too bad there's not volatility indexes on cryptocurrencies. You could really clean up there. But is it going higher than 20,000? Is it really going to go to the sky, or what's going to happen with it?
Well, with a market that's as not just volatile, but even going through parabolic moves, is that the price is much harder to pinpoint until you kind of see it reaching certain levels and what it's doing right by there. But the timing and cycles to me has been, it just keeps surprising me how technically precise, for lack of a better description, that Bitcoin has been over the last year or two. And one of the things I described a year, year and a half ago was developing 3.5 year and potential 7-year cycle in Bitcoin that would look for an important low in July of 2017. And then as we were going through that first swoon in Bitcoin from early June to mid-July, Bitcoin had also been trading very consistently on a 2-month cycle basis, where it set lows in mid-January, mid-March, mid-May, mid-July. I was looking for a subsequent low in mid-September, and then looking for more of that parabolic move up into mid-November and possibly stretching into the first half of January. And we're kind of right in that transition point there, because this January time frame is more intriguing to me, because there's kind of some overlap of different cycles where Bitcoin set very important lows in January of 2014, 2015, 2016, and that next phase of that cycle comes into play in January 2018, where it could also mark an inversion, like I was describing with the cycle progression tool earlier, where we see an important peak. But one of the other things I talked about a couple weeks ago was just that Bitcoin has also moved in very consistent waves. So from a low to a high, as opposed to a complete cycle, which would be a low to a high and back to a low. But going back over the last 2 years, up until the middle part of this year, Bitcoin had experienced 3 multi-month advances, and every one of them lasted precisely 5 months in duration. And the most recent one started on July 17th. And so that's why I was looking at December 17th as being a very pivotal time in Bitcoin. And that's when your latest rally culminated, was right on December 16th, 17th, creating the 4th advance of exactly 5 months each. So it's just, it's kind of intriguing to me that a market that's so so kind of crazy and not what you would expect to be adhering so closely to some of these technicals has actually been one of the more pure fulfillments of cycles, technicals, and wave theory, all which kind of work together. And so this time period leading into mid-January is critical for me looking out over the next year, because what it does in the next 2 to 3 weeks, and it's starting to give some indication of that, but what it does in that time period is going to have a very significant impact on my expectations for the next 6 to 12 months.
Interesting. Well, I guess we're going to find out a lot more in the coming weeks and months ahead. I just find the whole thing really fascinating, that cycles can converge with fundamentals and really show the market movement before the fundamentals became obvious. And I guess that's the business. So, hey, Eric, finding out more about you, obviously, we can go to insidetrack.com, InsideTrack.com. And what about your other sites? I know you've got a few others we should mention.
Yeah, the other primary site where I've archived a lot of this analysis, hundreds of posts, articles, reports, is 40yearcycle.com. It's the number 40, and then the words year cycle. .com. So that's where you could see access a lot of these previous publications and hopefully get a better understanding and comprehension of how the cycles have worked in the past and again, both their strengths and their weaknesses. You know, knowing their limitations is probably the most important thing.
Yeah. Well, there's always limitations. Let's face it. That's just the way it works. So anyways, hey, like I said, be part of the show. Let us know what you think of Eric's forecast, both prior and future. Email is easy, kl@carrylutz.com. Twitter feed, which has been pretty active lately, at Kerry Lutz, and the Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Eric, again, happy new year, healthy one to you and yours. We'll be checking back with you in the first quarter to see how things have worked out.
Thank you, Kerry, and a happy new year to you as well.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.